There are people committing suicide. And the United Nations reports that in the long term, the effects of this shutdown economically is probably going to lead to hundreds of thousands of child deaths around the world.
Wow.
In a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants, one management professor claims that he can help you become the kind of leader that you would want to follow. You are listening to The Leadersmith. Now, here is your host, Darren Gurdes.
So welcome to the Leadership Podcast. Here I have Dr. Scott Pearson with me again. Welcome back, Scott.
It's nice to see you.
Okay, so here, we just had you in a previous episode talking about why Trump isn't fantastic and flawless as a leader like he thinks he is, and why Hillary would be no better. And that was a great discussion. What I want to talk about here is just the economics of the coronavirus. So we have to weigh greater and lesser evils. And I think maybe we're a little out of balance. What do you say?
Well, I think it's not so much a balance. I think a lot of people have this perception that we can just look at one side of the equation and make decisions based on that entirely, which is really kind of a false approach.
Okay. So I know how you think about this, but let me play devil's advocate. Okay. So we can't lose one life. We've heard governors say we're going to do everything possible to prevent any deaths. And the shutdown, we're going to shut down all businesses until this plague passes and that kind of thing. It sounds good, right?
To some people, I guess that sounds viable. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to die. I don't want my parents who are in a retirement community to die. They're very susceptible. So
no, people who are susceptible should be, as much as possible, shielded from the effects. There's no doubt about that.
So why is overkill not the solution?
Well, you have to recognize, and I think this is, economists look at things from this perspective all the time. And I'm just going to remind your viewers that economics is not just about money. Economics is about behaviors and about the outcomes of those behaviors. And a lot of times it gets measured in dollar terms, but that's not the only way we look at things. And I think when we're thinking about behaviors, we have to think about a few different cases involving, say, a shutdown. Mm-hmm. So the first question that I have to ask is, what are the desired effects of the shutdown? But then we also have to ask, what are the undesired or perhaps just the unnoticed effects, the unseen effects? And for any action we take, there is the seen effects and the unseen effects. And we tend to plan things based upon our intentions. Our good intentions are that this thing is going to happen. Well, that's all well and good, but there may be outcomes that we haven't thought about. And so when we do something like a shutdown to prevent the spread of disease, which is in and of itself a good thing, it also has some negative consequences. And, the obvious negative consequences is some people are going to be out of work, and that's problematic. But when you just weigh somebody out of a job against somebody dying, well, obviously somebody dying is more significant than somebody out of a job. But I think where the calculus may have gone astray is we haven't measured, one person losing a life versus 1 million or 2 million or 5 million people being out of work. And that calculus gets different depending upon how many you're measuring against how many. More than that, given the way we've done this shutdown, it's not just one person dying against some number of people being out of work, because there are people dying because of the shutdown. There are people that are not getting medical treatments for cancer, uh-huh, for heart disease, for other kinds of ailments. There are people committing suicide. And the United Nations reports that in the long term, the effects of this shutdown economically is probably going to lead to hundreds of thousands of child deaths around the world.
Wow.
When we start thinking in terms like that, you have to take the economic effects as seriously as we do the immediate effects of the transmission of disease. And so we can't look at just one side. We have to recognize that there are important effects on both sides. Now, we still may come to the same conclusion. I don't know about that until we start looking at the numbers and we start looking at the effects, but we have to look at both sides.
Yeah, it reminds me of Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson, you know, looking at, can you explain that? You probably do that better than I do.
Well, I mean, some of the things that he talks about in there, I guess, are you referring
the
to
the lesson? Book? I mean, just the lesson, not all the examples, but just the
okay. Well, I mean, I guess the lesson would be that there's seen and unseen effects to everything. And quite often the unseen effects overwhelm the intentions. And if we aren't paying attention to those other effects, we're going to miss what's most important.
And in organizations, leaders do the same boneheaded thing all the time. We look at, oh, look at the upside of this proposal, but we're not looking at the downside. Wow, we're going to save all this money. Yeah, but we're so burning out our employees that it's not going to work anymore because we did this instead of that to save a dollar. And yeah. So we got to be careful with that. As you were talking, I was also thinking, you know, we could save 1.5 million lives a year if we just banned everybody from driving.
And that's the case that a lot of people have used as an example. I think it is true, and yet it isn't.
But, yeah, that's right. The other side is how many people don't get where they need to go in an emergency or they, you know, their lives are poorer, and because their standard of living went down, you have other issues that arise from that. Right. Yeah.
There's limitations on what you can do without motor vehicles. And if you seriously pursue that, yes, we could certainly ban cars. And we could certainly probably have some semblance of a life without any kind of motor vehicles. But are you going to be able to deliver food to everybody?
Right. I mean, so it's going to create a whole different problem set. We save these people that we can see. We don't save these that we do, you know, or we lose right. certain people that we just don't know. So now this is the toughest question that I'm going to ask you here, because I mean, I don't know the answer to it. What do you do? I mean, you're so the virus breaks and you're the president or the governor or whatever. What do you do? I mean, you don't want people to die, but at the same time, you're trying to weigh the economic. I mean, do you shut things down? Do you partially shut down? How do you go about doing it?
Well, these are really hard questions. And I'll be honest, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know exactly what needs to be done in every situation. I haven't lived through this particular virus before. So I think everybody, including the experts, are sort of feeling their way through. We're still trying to figure out how it transmits, how readily it transmits, to which people are immune, which people are susceptible, and so forth. So we act based upon the information that we have as best we can. And I think, you know, clearly some people have recognized that they are more at risk than others. And so they tend to be more willing to seclude themselves and be sequestered away from others who might be carrying the virus. Mm-hmm. I think as well, we have to be mindful of the fact that somebody that is showing signs of carrying the virus, we'd want them to be self-quarantining at least, right? And I think those are sort of some of the obvious cases. If there's a major outbreak in a city, do you take more action than that? I mean, that may be the case. I think it's not the case, though, if you see the outbreak in a city, that you shut down the rest of the state necessarily. And this is one of the things, you know, these outbreaks have been mostly localized.
Right.
And so I think if there are going to be shutdowns that take place, they also probably ought to be localized.
Mm-hmm. So the heavy-handed one-size-fits-all approach just simply doesn't work.
Well, one size doesn't fit all. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that we have to admit to start with. We don't know all the answers, but we probably can be pretty sure that whatever it is, one size doesn't fit all.
Okay, last questions. How will the new normal change business? What I'm saying when I ask that is, who are the winners? Who are the losers? And let me give you my thoughts or preface this by saying, I went to Walmart, all the weights were gone. Like the exercise equipment, all the free weights gone, wiped out. So I'm thinking that Peloton and the people that make weights are doing great, and that the gyms are suffering.
Well, I think you're going to see a lot of changes like that. And I think gyms, obviously, is one of the items that's been shut down in most states. And so people that want to maintain their health, and by the way, and maintaining your health is an important part of what we should all be individually doing. You know, those who are in better shape and better health are more, tend to be more resistant to any kind of virus. And so this is certainly something that you'd like to see people doing individually. But what businesses make it, I mean, this is so, you know, I have an investment management business. And so this is obviously something that I'm thinking a lot about all the time.
Yeah.
And we're not going to get all the answers, but we're working to think through what some of the outcomes are going to be. So we've talked before about, I don't want to be holding office real estate right now, or malls. My goodness, I wouldn't want to be a mall property owner right now. That's
you wouldn't want to be a mall property owner before this started, but definitely not now.
Right. But, you know, you start thinking about different aspects of this. So if I'm going on vacation, well, I could say I'm probably not going on a vacation because I don't want to take a plane anywhere because I know I can catch a cold on a plane. So I know I probably could catch this thing on a plane. So I think the airplanes, the airlines are going to be hard hit. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But in my mind, and in the average person's mind, they might make that choice. But are we not going to travel at all? Are we going to avoid? So we've started talking in my own family, well, what would we do if we wanted to have a vacation this year? It might be nice to go to an outdoor recreation area, a national park or something like that. But I'm not sure I want to stay at a hotel where I don't know what their standards are. What if we owned an RV? Wouldn't that be cool? And so I suspect you're going to see some unexpected success stories. Like you mentioned Peloton, I'm going to say Winnebago, mm-hmm. right? I mean, those are things that might turn out to be better than we expect. At the same time, you can look at some of the numbers already. So, you know, all the retailers have been beaten up because retail has been closed, right? But not all retail has been closed. And even among the ones that are open, there's some perception that, well, the food stores are going to do okay, but the other ones, I'm just not so sure. But one of the things that we've noticed is that office products, you know, Home Depot and Staples and things like that, they're not down in their sales at all. And I wondered why, and I wonder if this trend towards working from home, I mean, I still need paper clips and paper and a working computer and a printer that can print and all of that at home. If I'm going to be working from home, I want to have probably a better set of equipment.
So I can I can answer that last question for you. That's because there has been no season in life where honey-do lists have been getting completed like the last 2 or 3 months.
Right. Okay?
So that's Home Depot in a nutshell. So you and I are professors. We can teach online, but we've had to go online. It's not as convenient, but it's easy enough for us to do, right?
Yes.
This morning, my daughter had a sinus infection, and so we were talking to the doctor on the phone. I mean, that's going to be the wave of the future, I think. I mean, telemedicine is going to blow up. What else do you see, like telemedicine, curbside service for, I think there's curbside service for Domino's. I like that better. I went out, they put a pizza out there. I didn't have to talk to anybody. I prefer that. I hope they keep doing that afterwards.
There are definitely going to be changes in behavior. And I think, you know, eating out is going to change dramatically. That doesn't mean that restaurants are going to go away, but I think you're going to see, I've thought about restaurants and I've thought about, well, which ones are going to survive? And I think, you know, the high-end dining, there's going to be a market for that. Mm-hmm. And the what they call fast casual Chipotle and that sort type of place, I think will maintain its market. Fast food will survive. I'm not seeing really where that spot in the middle is going to really come out strong.
You mean like your local sub shop?
Or your eat-in restaurant, which has already been declining, right? The traditional middle market restaurant, Chili's or Applebee's or something like that. I'm not seeing where that's going to be the strongest place to be because, again, they make their money on volume. I mean, all restaurants do, but the high end, they can just jack up their prices and have a more specialized meal, and there's still a market there. And at the low end, they can emphasize, we're going to turn our tables fast. We're going to get people in, get them out, get them to pick up and take with them. and there's still a market there. But in the middle, really the experience is dining in, the experience is being part of the atmosphere, and that atmosphere is not popular right now. So it may come back in a couple of years, but I'm not sure how many of those types of restaurants are still going to be here a couple of years from now.
Okay. What are your final predictions? Very last question. What are your predictions of the future?
Well, I think the biggest change that we're going to see is the work from home phenomenon. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to see a lot more home businesses starting up, a lot more working from home, a lot more schooling from home. The homeschooling phenomenon probably will be taking off this year in ways that you never imagined.
Yeah.
They use that, and you know,
they used to ask me, like, homeschooling, how can you homeschool? Well, now you know.
Well, and you know, I've heard from friends who have never given it a thought before, and they're now asking questions, and they're now thinking, well, I wonder if this might be better. I wonder if there are ways we can make this work. And really, that's, you know, like everything else, we have to figure out how to make it work and how to adapt. But I think this is going to be a dramatic shift in terms of what we do from home. And if you think about it, all of this going into work, going into school, this is a relatively new phenomenon in history, right? Yep. If you go back before the Industrial Revolution, schooling at home, working at home, this was the norm. For generations, this was the norm.
Yeah, that's a
profound insight. We've had this period of time where going into work and going into school and going into everything was the way it was done. But I think we're going to maybe see a shift backwards. Not completely.
That's really a profound insight. I'm glad you raised that point, because we're so so pedestrian in our understanding, because, you know, we think about our lifespans or maybe what we read about the 20th century, but we haven't really thought about the great span of time and how people have operated over time. And, okay. At any rate, I said that would be the last question, so I'm going to hold myself to that, but I'm going to stop with or end with the quotation for contemplation, as I always do in every podcast episode. And this comes from Herb Stein, Herb Stein, the economist. I was reading his book in 1996, I think it was, entitled On the Other Hand. And he said, I summed up two main lessons of 50 years as a Washington economist. One, economists don't know much. Two, other people, including politicians who make economic policy, know even less about economics than economists do.
Those are good points.
Yeah. So I just figured that would be a useful way of wrapping this up. Thank you for joining us to talk about the economics of the coronavirus. And I'm sure our audience appreciates it.
Thank you for the invitation. Enjoyed it.